Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their different experiences within impact investing, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. Divine, I got to say, I love looking across from you right now. So let me get to this. So I'm Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here with Victor Lombard, better known as Divine, as you heard me just say. He is an innovative visionary, leader, hip-hop, rap recording artist. So maybe you'll throw in a few, what do you call that, raps?
Yeah, freestyle.
Freestyle. Balls. Okay, there you go. Urban entrepreneur, inspirational, motivational speaker, social and criminal justice reform advocate, an activist, an actor. Good Lord. You are a busy man.
I do it all, huh?
Yeah, you do. But today, his main focus is as CEO and founder of Solvent, which hopefully we'll get into that a little bit and hear more about what that is. Full transparency for our listeners. We are in dialogues right now about making an investment into Solvent. So I just want full transparency. But I know you will love hearing his story, his vision, and then you're going to sense his hustle coming right through these microphones. So, Divine, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Yeah, it's great. Do this. Start off with, why are you in Orlando this week?
Oh, I'm in Orlando this week for Blacks in Technology Conference, short BitCon, and I'm going to be a guest speaker there talking about how technology can be leveraged and utilized for social impact.
Your story, everybody has a phenomenal story, unique story. I want to hear your story, but I also want people to know that what we're going to talk about doesn't define you either. Okay.
Right. Of course.
But I think people hearing where you came from, a little about you, is awesome. So where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And then a little bit high level of your career.
Born and raised middle class in Newport, Rhode Island. If anybody doesn't know, Newport is the smallest city in the smallest state in the Union, Rhode Island. It's been known as the United States' first resort, if you would.
Okay.
Anyway, grew up there, went to school in Underwood, in like elementary school, Underwood. Kindergarten and all that. I made it to junior high school, Thompson Junior High School. I did like 1 year in Rogers High School at the ninth grade, but never completed it. So eighth grade formal education. Newport's a great place. I deal with a lot of racism, a lot of discrimination. It's mostly white. So it's odd that the story that I have, I'd be born and raised in Newport.
Ninth grade was it or eighth grade?
Eighth grade. I completed eighth grade.
You're the first person who I've had on a podcast who has only made it through eighth grade, but it's a huge testament to you. So tell me this, what happened in ninth grade? Why didn't you go to school?
My home life was dysfunctional. So at 10 years old, growing up middle class, 10 years old, my mother had like an emotional mental breakdown due to some situation with my father. Always known who my father was. He was never in my life as a role model or that fatherhood. And she moved away from Newport, went down south to Louisiana. Eventually me and my younger brother followed her there or brought down there by her. By that time she had got involved these unscrupulous individuals, involved with drugs, started using drugs. And by the time we came back up top to Newport, we were living in the projects. And at that time, it was like the 80s crack epidemic had just hit. And she became addicted to crack cocaine. Mm. And that's what kind of took my life to that poverty or that struggle that I wasn't used to. That's why going to school, I just couldn't function dealing with the home life I had with that dysfunction, her drug addiction, and going to school to focus on being educated or getting educated.
So where did you turn to in 9th, 10th, 11th grade?
Oh, the streets. So by 13 years old, I was in the streets, started hustling. That was the only means I had to survive. It's the only resource I knew of. Anybody that was a so-called mentor, if you would, or a role model, they sold drugs. That was what you did. So I gravitated towards that, started selling drugs, became very, very good at it. And by 19 years old, was incarcerated in federal prison for 7 years.
So while I made a comment earlier that from an education standpoint, I don't think I've interviewed somebody here that had only been through eighth grade, but I also want to back up what you have been able to accomplish throughout your life is extraordinary. And the education that you've put yourself through on your own over the last, whatever it is, 20, 30 years is extraordinary. So, so congratulations to you. So then you went to prison for how long at 19?
At 19, my original sentence was 7 years.
Okay.
And I had 5 years supervised release. And if you consider that, that's like a 11-year sentence, actually, if my math is correct, which I think it is, or 12 years. So I had supervised release. So I come home, got right back into the drug game. It wasn't long before I was back in the drug game, you know, to make money and rearrested about 19 months in being out and then sentenced to another 2.5 years.
So what happens after that? You go back in again?
Go back in and I started dealing with that negative psychological cycle of recidivism. I've been hustling since 13, go to prison at 19. I get out when I'm 25. I'm back in the game selling drugs, back in prison 19 months later, and that cycle just kept repeating itself. And I got caught in it, like most individuals do. Most people don't come home, when they come home or they're released from prison, within three years, they recidivate. They reoffend, and they're back in prison. And then they're caught in that same cycle of going in and out of prison. And I look at that as three major things that people that get out need. One is a support system.
Yep.
A lot of people that come from the background I come from, they have dysfunctional families. There's no real support system, whether that's family, friends, loved ones, or organizations, you know, or religious organizations, churches, right, what have you. The second thing is gainful employment and a sustainable income, right? So when I get home, I have no trade skill.
Yep.
I have no real work or work history. So I got to go work at either D'Angelo's or a McDonald's, making pennies and not really making enough money to live off of. And it's not attractive as me going in the streets, being able to make $1,000 a day or $2,000-$3,000 a day, $100,000 a month. It's not as attractive. So you eventually gravitate back to the streets. The third thing, which is the most important that I think, is to change behavior, which is the hardest piece. And I know because I've dealt with it. And it took a long time for me to finally break free from that cycle of recidivism that I was caught in.
All right. So dig into that a little bit. How does one change their behavior and end up the way you end up today? That's a massive change.
That's a heavy weight that you can carry, like to even think about it, because it's not easy. For me, it first took 100% dissatisfaction. Like I was taught that until there's 100% dissatisfaction, no change will occur. So I applied that thinking first of all.
Okay.
And usually if someone doesn't have 100% dissatisfaction, it takes some type of dynamic that happens in their life to shift their mind. So for me, the last time I was in prison, it was a dynamic of me going back to prison yet again, but it was also the 100% dissatisfaction with that. Mm. And I was like, I got to change my life. I'm too intelligent for that. So I set my mind to do it. So first it was all me recognizing the problem.
Yep.
And then me trying to find a solution to the problem. And through that, I did introspection. And I said, what do I really like doing? Like I said earlier, I don't have a trade skill, mm-hmm, right? I didn't have a work history. Like, what do I really like doing? What am I good at? Taking stock of what talents and skills, yep, and abilities I had. And I said, you know what? I like the process of making money. I've always been intuitively business-minded. I get that from my father, that DNA intelligence. So I was like, you know what? I want to be a serial entrepreneur. So I started looking into how can I take entrepreneurship seriously and learn formal entrepreneurship to take myself out of this condition and circumstance.
What are you, 25, 27, whenever you get back out?
Yeah.
The last time you were incarcerated to today, what you're doing? And we'll dig in deeper later, but just high level.
Yeah, high level, yeah. So came home 25, went back to prison, like I said. Last time was 10 years ago when I was locked up. Last time in prison is where I came to this realization, I want to do entrepreneurship. I set out on that path. And one of the things I looked at was information and knowledge is very big to me. It's like the epitome of somebody being able to free themselves. Because I've always used knowledge and information to position myself for that next level, if you would.
Yep.
Albeit it was in the drug game, you know, I still was able to look at that and knew that it held a power for me. I just took that same concept and just applied it to the legal world, right? Formal entrepreneurship. Mentorship was key to me. Finding people who supported you, who believed in you.
Right.
Right? Because you don't get that. When I was coming up in the projects in poverty, I didn't have that. I didn't have mentors. I really didn't even know what a mentor was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until I started putting my mind on this new track. As I put my mind on this new track, the more I read, the more and more I researched, the more and more I studied and dug, the more and more things started coming together for me, if you would. And I just kept taking each step forward, educating myself, literally educating myself and relearning.
How were you educating yourself inside of prison? And I'm assuming, I mean, I know you, it's also happened since you've been released, but you had to do that while you're incarcerated.
Yeah.
So practically, what did that look like?
Absolutely. That looked like me knowing that I needed to get educated because I didn't want to be behind when I got out. I didn't want to be 7 years behind when I came home. I at least wanted to be at the same level. Again, I had an 8th grade formal education. I got my GED while incarcerated.
Okay, there you go.
But I still had to further my education. Yep. So I would just read books. I would say, okay, pick a subject. I love world history, geography. I grabbed the books from the library. I would read those. I'm an avid reader. That's one of my superpowers that I hardly ever talk about. A lot of my learning has come from me reading, building my vocabulary, being able to articulate my ideas and my visions and my thoughts. That all came from reading, right? I think that's a fundamental foundation, reading, arithmetic, and writing. And I did all that because I was a recording artist as well. I've been a songwriter since I was 10 years old. So being able to write poetry and these type of different skills played into me creating prison into a a workshop or a university or a study hall for myself over those 7 years.
All right. So you obviously are doing a ton of work, educating yourself, introspection, figuring out what your strengths, your weaknesses are. You get released. What have you done over the last 10 years up to what you're doing today?
10 years ago, I came home, was really focused on achieving something greater for my life and changing my life. However, I did fall back into selling drugs. But here's what was different, Jeff. It no longer resonated with my spirit. Mm. So the voice within me that was once low was like a light whisper in my ear to not do the negative things. Now it became loud. Mm. And it spoke to me. It convicted me, if you would. Mm-hmm. And it convicted me and said, you're doing this wrong. You're not doing it right. You need to change your life for real. And I didn't feel right selling drugs no more. First time in my life.
Why didn't you feel right selling drugs? What was it about it?
Because the dissatisfaction has already set place in my mind. 100% dissatisfaction already set place in my mind and had grown over that short time that I did the last time I was incarcerated. In my study and my readings, I was changing. I was transforming. When I knew that it didn't resonate with my spirit, I knew something was going on with me. I knew something was absolutely different. I couldn't put my hand on it at the time, but I knew it was something greater for me. Mm. And I followed it. And in following it, I was able to find a mentor. And when I found that mentor, that man, his belief in me changed my entire life. Mm. And that allowed me to enter entrepreneurship, start a building, enter the technology space, which led to me entering the financial technology space and building what I'm now building, solving.
Well, I got to tell you, as somebody who's been in the financial services industry for, I think, 27 years, the last, whatever it is, 7 years has been an entrepreneur in this space. You know, and I had the background and I'm an entrepreneur today, and to see where you're at alongside of me and where I'm at, it's a testament to your mental toughness, hustle, and fortitude. Because being an entrepreneur is difficult, but then coming from even your background and your experience to overcome that stuff is huge. So, I mean, like what you're going to do tomorrow and what you're going to be speaking at tomorrow. And you obviously gave me some updates of just some things that have happened as the CEO of Solvent. I mean, it's remarkable to hear what's happened. I know one of the things you've talked about is this idea of kind of casting a vision, seeing a picture, and then you go find it. If I'm not mistaken, you kind of had a vision while in prison of what this was going to look like. Did you not?
Yeah, absolutely did. Just entrepreneurship in general, just changing my life and becoming an entrepreneur, taking all the skills that I use in the streets, because they were entrepreneurial skills, right, and just transferring over, right? The transferable skills and applying them in legal entrepreneurship. The vision I have for this was just really financial empowerment was the basis of the idea, right? How do we financially empower individuals who come from these communities, who come from these backgrounds, who don't have good relationships or positive relationships with money, mm-hmm. But yet they live a life where they make a lot of money. I was one of those guys.
Right.
I made a lot of money. Never knew about the stock market. Never knew about saving or paying myself 10%, having savings away, you know, having a runway,
right,
that you could focus on these other things while you pay your bills. I never thought of these concepts because I was living in a survival mindset, not a thrival mindset. So I had to come from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset and really say, yeah, I've educated myself to a large degree, but how can I even double down or triple down even more and take my education to the next level and to industry and to corporate? And those are all the things I did over the last 10 years. I tested my fortitude. I tested my will.
Here's a question that I ask all of our guests. How would you best describe who you are in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
Wow. Oh, there's so many words. I have to say, but what's coming to mind right now is survivor. I'm a survivalist. It's what allowed me to get to this point. No matter what has befallen me in my life, I've always came out a winner. And I always like to say to myself, I forever win, even when I lose.
So then you're the CEO and founder of Solvent. Give us a brief picture of what Solvent is about, maybe the mission, the vision of Solvent.
Solvent's mission is real simple, to facilitate financial empowerment and well-building for the system impacted. So when I say system impacted, generally most people think just incarceration, but Solvent is redefining that. And we've broken that up into four segments. One being the socioeconomic disadvantaged, two, the formerly incarcerated, three, the family, friends, and loved ones of the formerly incarcerated and or incarcerated, mm-hmm. and the incarcerated. And we really help them optimize their financial lives. That's really, in a nutshell, what Solvent is. But I also like to say that Solvent is the world's first, for us, by us, super neobank for the system impacted.
That is awesome. And this next question you may have just answered, but I also know you even are dreaming bigger than Solvent. How would you say you're trying to change the world?
There's two parts of that. How is by being a vessel for higher power, whatever anybody wants to call that higher power, how they define it, whatever medium they define it through. I just know there's a higher power that I'm blessed to have working through me to be able to bring that to the world and change it. That's one way.
Okay.
The second way is through the power of entrepreneurship, the power of bringing people knowledge, information, know-how, and the ability to see in themselves what I saw in myself. And that's to dream big, start small, but dream big, and never give up on yourself. Always believe in yourself. Had I given up on myself through everything I went through, I wouldn't be here today to be talking to you on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be able to have achieved the great things I've achieved. But like you said, I think there's so much more for me to achieve before I leave this planet beyond Solvent. And me and you had personal discussions about mm-hmm. where I want to take my mm-hmm. career. And that's all about helping people and empowering them mm-hmm. to bring the best out of them.
So look, on this podcast, one of the key questions that we always want to understand from our guests is your ideas around the power of capital. And I'm fascinated to hear, not to put the expectations really high for you, but in light of just your background, in light of what Solvent's doing, when did you realize the power of capital and what does that mean to you?
A few instances in my life, I realized the power of capital at a young age. So yep. Two things took place. Let me give you two things that took place in my life. Me and my brother used to get these small figurines. I haven't told the story to anybody. This was exclusive.
All right.
Me and my brother used to get these small figurines of like Smurfs. Yep. And we would have these figurines. This is when I was being raised middle class.
Yeah.
So we was in our bedroom one day and we put all our toys out, what we owned, each of us owned. And we had an in-house yard sale between us, if you would, right? Yeah. So he would sell me his toys and I would say, I'll give you a dime for that. So I would buy his toys from him for like a dime.
Okay.
And then I would turn around and God forgive me, I would charge him like 25 cents for mine. So by the time we both had like a set a lot of money, like we had like $5 each or whatever it was in coins. So by the time he was broke, I had all his toys. I had all his figurines. So that's one instance, right? A funny one.
Yeah.
But this is young age, not how I thought, right?
Interesting.
The second time is that.
How much older are you than him?
A year.
Okay. So it was actually pretty evenly matched.
Yeah. But I was a shopper, one of the other two. Anyway, the second instance I would say is when we were in the projects now. This is when we're in poverty.
Okay.
There was a penny candy store up the street from the projects. So I would walk up there. At this point, you know, my mother's not really watching us. We're looking a little wayward in the streets doing things. I would walk up to the penny store and I'd buy the penny candy. I maybe spend $2, $3, $4, whatever it is. I get some the little cakes and stuff like that. Then I would go back to the hood and I had this army trunk and it had like two holes in it. I put a string around it and I would put all my candy inside this trunk and I walk throughout the project selling to the kids. Mm. So I realized the power of capital then, right? And then even more so when I got into the drug game, all the money I was making, because I saw that as a way, as a means for me to escape the projects and save my mother from the condition she was under with her drug addiction. So I always recognized the power of capital in some form or some fashion. And even more so now, being in the entrepreneurship and startup building space where capital is everything for a startup to succeed.
Right.
And African Americans getting less than 1% of capital in venture capital, it's a travesty, if you would, because there's so many brilliant and bright ideas coming from this community that go unrealized because of a lack of capital.
Mm-hmm. So let me be a critic for a second. I'm going to generalize. So this isn't necessarily true for everybody, but big banks, maybe there's a negative feeling towards big banks. They're just taking advantage of their customers or some version of that. Solvent enters that world. How do you do it differently than the big banks? And how do you ensure that there's this stewardship component to Solvent as you relate to your customers?
Good question. First, I'm a social impact driven CEO, entrepreneur. That's first and foremost. So I'm always thinking about how to apply social impact. Yeah, we're for profit, but we're also for purpose, mm-hmm. right? And that's the thing that separates us immediately from big banks. Big banks are a necessary evil. I think a bank account, a debit card, are utility products that we use to make our lives efficient when it comes to our finances. But the way that Solvent's doing it different is because we have this robust educational component. We're core fintech, but we're part edtech. We're part meeting, we're part social. So for us, it's all about building community and having that focus on that. And also, we're like, we consider ourselves the first lifestyle-driven financial technology company. Because when it comes to empowering yourself financially and being able to build wealth, I like to say it's a contact sport. You can't do it sitting on the sidelines. So with that being said, a great key insight that I learned over the years of being in fintech is that wealth building and financial empowerment is 80% psychology and 20% mechanics. But not many companies focus on the psychology piece, mm-hmm. which is where the transformation takes place. So that's where Solvent focuses on, to make sure we cover that piece, to let people have people gain the awareness, the access, the opportunity, the mentorship, the frameworks and the pathways, the same way that Divine was able to succeed in his life and get to the point to where I'm building a Solvent, because I want to help other people that come from my demographic or similar circumstances and situation.
So I had the pleasure of going into Lyman Prison last Thursday and met a bunch of interesting and amazing guys and had a discussion with one of them. They were actually at this facility. One of the things they did, actually a number of things, more than I've seen at most. They would make all the clothing for at least the inmates all across Colorado.
Right.
And so one of the gentlemen I was talking to, we were actually, he was in, I think there's, they also do some silk screening and stuff for hats. And
Yeah.
But we were talking about what happens when he gets paid and where does he put the money? And look, I actually have known this stuff, but sitting behind the walls last week, it just hit me in a different light. Can you articulate for our listeners, if you're an inmate and you are working a job and you get paid, what happens to that money? Where does it go? Do you put it on your mattress? Which we know that's not the case, but.
Well, I was an inmate and I wasn't getting pennies on dollar. Yeah. I was working for 12 cents an hour in federal prison. I eventually got a job in Unicor, the industries, where we make clothing make things for the U.S. government.
Yep.
And we sell to the private sector as well as the government sector. I was making $100 a month.
Okay.
And I was able to live on that because I was frugal, because I was thinking about how I spent my money, because that was the only money I was getting. And so there was no real place for me to save my money, if you would. Definitely not invest my money to make my money work for me. So I just put it right back into the system. It sat there, right? So they're earning money on my money as it sits in this master account.
They kind of have a fake bank account for
you. Yeah. It's like a master account. They put all the money in and then they pay you, and it goes on the system they have, the computer system, to give you the credits, if you was a credit debit system.
Yep.
And you're able to use that to buy the telephone, to go to commissary, buy the goods that you need. But there's no empowerment behind that. Absolutely not. And most people would get money orders. In my day, it was get a money order, you send it out to buy a book or send it home to your family or whatever the case may be. But there's no real mechanism for somebody to empower themselves if they've been down 10 years and got $20,000 sitting in their inmate account, if you would.
Did you actually know people that had any amount of money that they'd been able to save up in that account?
Yeah. Well, either was saving or was money given to them from outside and it's just sitting there and they've had it. I've met a lot of people that had a lot of money just sitting in this account.
So even go back to how you spent time and effort educating yourself, in theory, you could have been doing that in the financial realm, even to learn how to manage your own money if you had more control over that capital during your years of being in prison.
Absolutely. It was always key to think forward, like upon my release, right? How much money am I going home with? So I would always save that money, save as much as I could anyway. A lot of discipline, because I couldn't have everything else that the other inmates had. You know, they may have 3-4 pairs of tennis shoes they got from the commissary, what have you. They're able to buy, these different food items beyond what we know what they served us, which was always better than what they served us, by the way. So I never got to really live high in prison, if you would.
So how big of an opportunity do you think it is to be able to provide, and I'm going to narrow your definition just for this discussion, how big is it to try to solve this financial empowerment education while in prison?
Well, let's say 600,000 inmates are released every year. That's a lot of people being released.
Yep.
Imagine if we had a direct pipeline into prison, from prison to Solvent, let's say Solvent, right? If we could begin educating individuals prior to their release, how would that be able to change the successful reentry?
Yeah.
What would the, how could that change the dynamics of what the recidivism rate is? They need to be ready to go home and prepare before that. So Solvent has an initiative called Solvent Prep, Solvent Pre-Reentry Program. And our goal with that initiative is to grab them where they're at before they even released. So they have a chance at successful reentry because Solvent wants to set them up for success.
Right.
And I've learned that you have to be set up for success or you're not going to be able to achieve it. I've been through it. I lived it. I know what it's like. So that's how I'm able to, as they say, reverse engineer that whole process of getting out through the, through Solvent's initiative of Solvent Prep.
So one last comment, and then I'll ask you the final question. So in prison last week, one of the things that hit me again talking to this individual was this bank account situation, which really wasn't a bank account. So I think he had a bank account, but he had to use his mom as a power of attorney who was doing it outside of the system, right, so to speak. But then in talking to him, the other thing that hit me was he has incremental capital that if he had the opportunity, he would love to invest it.
Right, right, right.
And look, this is the space I'm in. I've been around the prison system for 30 years. For some reason, it just clicked in a different way. Right, right. So I'll just tell you, and again, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, but just talking to this guy, I'm like, my gosh, if there was an option for him to be able to, and I don't care if the amount, I don't care if it's $5 a month. There's a discipline, there's a mindset, and to start thinking about that now before you get released, would just, I think it could be life-changing for people when it comes to the financial empowerment. So I'm cheering you on and love what you're doing. I don't know if you have any thoughts or comments to that or.
Yeah, I definitely have some thoughts and comments to that. In prison, there's, you know, there's rules and regulations, right? So there's only so much you can do without them seeing it as breaking the rules of prison, circumventing certain rules and regulations that they have in place. But what I like that you spoke about his mother and his, him having the desire to invest. Imagine if his mother had Solvent and was learning the process or the fundamentals it takes to invest. And she could facilitate that investment for him on his behalf in her name or what have you. Imagine if she had a Solvent debit card that had a sub account to where he could send money to her and she could put that into that account for him and it could sit there. And we have a robo advisor that could invest small amounts of that money, you know, in ETFs and he makes money on that.
Yep.
Doesn't he have to look at it because he doesn't need it in prison, right?
Right. Right.
This money's out there in the world. So there's so many implications of what could be done. And Solvent plans on unraveling all those things in a phase progression. So I'm excited what we're doing. I love your support of what we're doing. So
let's finish it up with this. And this is a hard question. If you could make one dream, but you could throw two in there, come true in your life, what would it be?
Oh man. Wow. That's a heavy question. That thing's a little loaded too, but I would want to be the best version of myself before I leave the planet. Whatever that is, highest level that I could achieve, that man could achieve if you would in his lifetime.
And why is that important to you?
Because I can use that as a tool to help other people achieve the same thing. That would be my wish.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I think you should just leave it at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
Nah, support Solvent. Reach out to us, please. Follow us on social media at www.justsolvent.com. Support the movement. Look into what we're doing. If you have family, friends, loved ones that are incarcerated, have been incarcerated, or affected by the justice system, please reach out to us. See how we can help them. And thank you for having me.
I think I probably told you this before, but having you as a friend in my life is inspiring to me. The days as an entrepreneur when I'm like, man, this is sneaking hard. All I got to do is get a text from you with your energy. And I'm like, dude, if this guy can do it, I can do it.
So, that's right. That's right.
So you don't realize is that you're probably more of a mentor to me than you even have a clue of. So, so thank you for that.
It's a blessing.
Appreciate your willingness to be transparent.
Always.
And honest. I know some of this stuff is probably not the most exciting thing for you to be sharing, but it is who you are. And I think it's all part of your story of making you the best version of you. And I'm watching how it impacts others. And so I'd love to see this thing go viral, if that's the right way to say it.
Likewise,
the impact that you can have. So with that, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice, and please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Till next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer.
such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.